Welcome to the Defence Forces podcast, brought to you by the Defence Forces Public Relations Branch.
Hello and welcome to the Irish Defence Forces podcast. My name is Captain Keane Clancy, and today we're chatting to Lieutenant Paul O'Brien, the Gunnery and Fisheries Officer on board Eli Kira, about the Naval Service Cadetship and the process of becoming a qualified Naval Service Operations Officer. Thanks very much for coming on, Paul.
Thanks, Keane. Good to be here.
Welcome. So just to kind of go through what we're going to talk about. So we're going to go through a bit about your own background, and then we're going to talk about the various phases of the Naval Service Cadetship. We'll skate over the period of time that's spent in the Curra, just a brief overview at the start of the training, and then we'll deal with the actual military training itself, time on board ships, and the time in the National Maritime College of Ireland and the type of qualifications you can expect to get and the type of training you can expect to do. So first of all, though, for people outside, for people who may not know, like, what exactly is the role of a Naval Service Operations Officer?
So the operations branch, it's very diverse. You've an opportunity to serve and work in a variety of different departments. So we can talk about navigation, communications departments, logistics, gunnery and fisheries departments on ships at sea, and as well as postings ashore as well.
And like, there's obviously the kind of military aspect of it as well that, like, we've seen, we've obviously over the last few weeks been doing podcasts on the three services cadetships, but there's the becoming a manager and a military officer on board the ship as well, and the maintenance of discipline and that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a huge factor in our training and in our operations roles. So as you develop your experience levels, obviously you progress within the organisation and you can move up to roles such as the executive officer and ultimately, I suppose, operations, it's focused on the ultimate goal is becoming captain of a state ship, so that's the end goal, I suppose, for an operations branch officer.
Okay, that's the big one that you're all kind of aiming towards. So, just for yourself, like, just a bit of background on you, Paul. Like, did you always want to join the Naval Service, or what kind of drew you to the job? Or
To be honest, I didn't really have a family history associated with the Naval Service. I didn't have a huge amount of experience on the water. I suppose I had an interest in leadership and the responsibility associated with a Defence Forces officer role. And I suppose I thought the Naval Service was the best place for me to start at.
Okay, yeah. And where are you from? Are you,
I'm Limerick originally.
Oh, you're Limerick originally. Okay, cool. So, like, with regard to your kind of career, so how long have you been in and what kind of roles have you filled since you actually joined?
So I joined as an operations branch cadet in 2010. I completed a two-year cadetship and was commissioned September 2012. I qualified as a naval watchkeeper in 2015, and since then I've served in a number of different roles at sea and ashore.
Okay, right. And currently you are, as we said, on the Eli Kira.
Eli Kira, yes. So the gunnery and fisheries officer on board the Eli Kira.
So just to kind of start off on the actual cadetship itself, so you come in the gate in onto Hallbowl Island on your first day. The first thing you do is you do a period of familiarisation.
Yes, so cadets undergo a week or possibly 2 weeks of sea familiarisation. So they're basically straight out onto a naval service ship to get an experience of life at sea. And this is just prior to embarking on their military training in the Curra camp with their army and their Air Corps counterparts.
Okay, so you have a couple of weeks done, and then you go up for that first initial 3 months in the Curra camp. What's the goal of that from a naval service point of view?
I suppose it's just giving you a grounding in military life. It's giving you an introduction to the basics of military training, shooting, saluting, all the fundamentals of becoming a member of the Defence Forces.
And the military socialisation aspect, which we've spoken about in the previous episodes on the Army and the Air Corps cadetships, is very important. That kind of bonding with your classmates and getting used to being in a military setting.
Exactly, yeah, that's fundamental to the first phase, that 3 month period in the Curra camp, yes.
Okay, so you do your 3 months in the Curra camp, you've done a bit of foot drill, you've done the Steyr rifle and the kind of section level weapons, and at that point then you move back down to the naval base to actually begin the maritime element of your training. So what does that involve when you get back down to Hallbowlin?
So yeah, you return to Hallbowlin, and I suppose you're just getting an introduction to the fundamentals of being a seafarer and an operations officer in the naval service. So you're embarking on a number of short courses to I suppose hone your skills on the different elements needed in terms of naval service life.
And so, like, with regard to sort of your initial seamanship training, like getting used to being on board a ship and doing things, what does that kind of entail? Like, your,
so yeah, seamanship training, you're looking at line handling, knot tying, all the basics of life at sea, essentially the fundamental skills you need to have any sort of a nautical career or background.
And as you said, to me, to kind of operate on board the deck of a ship.
Exactly, yes.
And then you start onto the fundamentals of navigation as well.
Yes, you start with your navigation, so you're starting with your basics in terms of paper charts, how to navigate a ship safely, and how to learn the tools, I suppose, you'll need in your future career.
Okay, right. And it's at a kind of a very base level, and you kind of build up from kind of a very base level.
Exactly, yeah. You're starting with the very basics of navigation, paper chart work, learning how to plan routes and execute pilotage safely.
Okay, right. And then what kind of other topics are we talking? I presume like learning about the weather and things is an important part, especially if you're going to be taking a vessel out to sea.
Yeah, meteorology as well is fundamental for any operations officer, and an understanding of how the weather systems work around us, yes.
Okay. And like other short courses then, you mentioned like there's like engineering weeks, kind of gunnery weeks, stuff that is kind of part of learning about these like different specializations on board a ship.
Exactly, yeah. So as a cadet, I suppose it's fundamental that you get an insight into different departments on a naval service ship. So we do a week of engineering experience, I suppose, or just getting the basics of the engineering systems on board the ship.
We're talking about like down in the bowels of the ship itself.
Exactly, yeah. How a ship operates and how the engineering department manage their resources. Then we have a communications week. We have a number of other short courses, such as PST, so personal survival techniques, and damage control and firefighting. So these are all kind of courses essential to life at sea.
So like, regards sort of survival training, I think a lot of people would be interested, especially, I would imagine that the sea survival thing is very extensive, especially you can be out hundreds of miles off any land. So what's that kind of training like?
Yeah, so that's carried out in the Maritime College. Yeah. It's a very interesting course. You're learning the fundamentals of how to deal with an emergency situation. How abandoning a ship at sea, obviously, is a very dangerous situation, and you're just learning how to go about that safely in the pool over there, the simulation pool.
I've seen a bit of footage of that, and we would have put stuff out on it before, but it's really extensive. It's quite like a lot of kind of big wave generation, and kind of really puts you through an idea of what it would be like to actually have to abandon a ship in a storm.
Exactly, yeah. It's very, very interesting course. Wind simulators and wave simulators, as you said, it's a very interesting course to carry out.
And what about the damage control and firefighting course?
Yeah, so that's another course conducted in the Maritime College. So obviously, when you're at sea, if you have a fire on board a ship, you can't call the fire brigade, so you need to be able to fight the fire yourself.
Yeah.
So the damage control firefighting course is a fundamental that every person on board a ship has to complete before they can go to sea.
Okay, well, it makes sense. I know we did a podcast a few weeks ago with the captain of the LE James Joyce, sorry, and he was talking about how a ship is like a little village in itself, and it needs to be self-sufficient and be able to do all of these
exactly,
things itself,
yes,
like firefighting
exactly,
and like being able to administrate yourself effectively at sea. So that's kind of part of the initial phase of training. There's also something that is common to all of the three services would be the physical fitness side of it.
Yeah, that's a huge element throughout the cadetship, yes. So right from the start, you're embarking on regular PT sessions. You're up first thing in the morning, going for a jog, doing a kind of EMA, as we call them, early morning activities. So you're kind of getting your body built up, I suppose, to having a very high level of fitness by the time the cadetship completes.
And that's mainly, that starts off, I presume, like in runners and shorts and kind of progresses its way up into...
Yeah, everything from running to circuit training. We move on then to kind of battle PTs, where you're doing physical training sessions, wearing your kind of army equipment or your naval service equipment.
Yeah. Okay, well, so we're building up that level of robustness, like, you know...
Exactly, yeah.
That kind of robustness is a real sort of standard thing that we've seen in everybody we've talked to about the three cadetships. So... Okay, so we've gone through like the basic kind of seamanship training. You've started navigation. You've done your survival training and your damage control firefighting and your various sub courses. There was one actually that we didn't mention that I have actually heard about before, which is the Fisheries Week.
Yeah, so we conduct kind of a familiarization week for all cadets. So just the fisheries obviously is very important for the Naval Service. There's quite a lot of legislation involved and a lot of technical measures that need to be learned for all operations branch officers. So we conduct kind of a familiarization week in conjunction with the Fisheries Monitoring Centre, the Naval Base.
Yeah.
So it's just getting to know how to conduct the fisheries boarding, how to carry out net measurements, getting familiar with all the legislation, basically. That
And all the various species of fish too, so you know.
Exactly,
someone's,
yeah. Familiarization.
Someone's catching something that they're supposed to be catching or they're
exactly.
not supposed to be catching.
Fish ID is an important part of that as well, yes.
Okay, so we talked about the physical robustness, we talked about that initial bit of training. So when you move into the kind of further phase of training, you start spending a bit more time in the National Maritime College of Ireland for your actual degree that comes with the training.
Yeah, so as an operations branch officer, we do a level 7, level 8 in nautical science. So that's in the Maritime College.
And like, what's kind of involved in that? Obviously, are you going in as a kind of civilian into the college? Is it kind of a downtime from the military side of it, or is that kind of maintained?
No, so you're attending college in your uniform essentially, but you're in the same class as civilian students. So yeah, we have a large class of students studying to become officers in the Merchant Navy. So we're training side by side with them.
Just so that you're like international best practice, and you all have the same sort of international qualification.
Exactly.
For operating both in a military environment and in a civilian environment.
Yeah, the fundamentals are the same, really. Yes.
And so in the degree, what kind of topics are covered? What are the fundamental subjects of nautical science?
So I suppose it's touching on a lot of the stuff we talked about earlier, like some meteorology, your navigation kind of basics, but it's obviously building it up a level. There's a large kind of science base to it as well, like spherical trigonometry, some applied maths, and a few other kind of core subjects.
And is that kind of applied maths, that's all related to learning how to navigate the ship effectively using the kind of charts we talked about earlier?
Exactly, using what's around you, navigating, astro-navigation as well, that kind of side of the house, just kind of learning the fundamentals of navigating, really.
Okay, right. And then you mentioned that there's a kind of a ship construction block as well, and is that just learning about various types of ships?
Various types of ships, how to handle them. Ship stability then is another key factor, especially for the merchant students who would be, working on cargo ships or
tankers. So it's big containers, and there's a lot of calculations that have to go into how many containers and where you can fit them and what you can do with them, so that they kind of remain safe. Well, and obviously at the same time you're coming back into the naval college in the evenings of your study time.
So you're living in the naval base, and you're going over to college then in the mornings for the day's activities, yes.
And kind of then maintaining the sort of level of fitness and robustness that you built up in the first kind of part of training and kind of maintaining that military discipline.
Exactly, yeah.
All right. And so in the summer period then after the kind of college term ends, we come to your first sustained block at sea.
Exactly, yeah. Everyone is posted out to a naval service vessel, so you're getting your first kind of 8 weeks of time on a ship. So it's probably the first real taste of life at sea.
And what was that like for you?
It was good, yeah. It took some adjusting.
Yeah.
It was a good experience. Obviously, initial few days, you're lost. You don't know where you're going. You're getting lost on the ship.
Yeah.
You're feeling a bit queasy at times.
A little bit.
yeah. We all get a small bit of it, but it's a great experience. You get to see how a ship really works, as opposed to just reading about it. You're kind of living it.
Of course, and from people that I would have talked to before about it, other people in the naval service, for anybody that's thinking of joining the naval service as either a recruiter or as an officer cadet, the seasickness thing seems to play on people's minds, but it is something that you do get over eventually, that it does kind of go out.
You do, yeah. Most people will have maybe a day or two of it, but 2-3 days into it, you're feeling fine again, and you generally build up a tolerance to it. So it's not something very few people really suffer with it long term.
Well, that's good. I'm sure that's good for a lot of people.
Absolutely, yeah.
And what about as we were down on the Elite Hero just for a brief kind of look around just before we did the podcast, and it's a very, space is at a premium, shall we say? So it's important. Things are designed in such a way that they fit into places and everybody has a little space. How is it adjusting to that kind of environment?
Yeah, I found that quite tough, right? You don't have as much space as you're used to, I suppose. But the cadetship is kind of designed to get you used to, I suppose, a 4-week block. So you're generally in the base for 4 weeks, then you get to go home for a weekend. So that's mirroring, I suppose, life at sea, where you're doing probably a 4-week patrol.
Yeah.
So the cadetship is designed specifically to get people used to life at sea, really.
And get used to that kind of rhythm.
And you're in close proximity to your classmates as well, so it's...
Yeah, so I'm sure you'll knock a bit of crack out of it as well.
Oh, yeah, it's very good. Yeah. Very good fun, yeah.
What ship did you actually serve your time on, or do you serve on different ships for the period?
I went to Eli Neave, yeah. So she'd be quite a bit larger than the Kira we were on this morning, but still space is at a premium on board any ship, really. But you have your gyms on, your gym on board, so you can keep fit.
Yeah.
You have your rec spaces, so it's all about getting used to it, really.
It's also it's amazing when you're on board these ships to see the sheer amount of kind of amenities and facilities and things that are actually put on board. What obviously it's a large thing from the outside.
Yeah, but it's misleading from the outside. Yeah. You don't appreciate what's in there, really.
So all of this then is pushing towards, so after the summer period, you're moving towards your actual commissioning as an officer in the naval service, not the completion of your training as, say, an operations officer, but the finishing of the actual cadetship portion of it.
Yes, so I would have been commissioned September 2012, but obviously there's still quite a bit of training involved before you can become a qualified naval watchkeeper in the operations branch. So,
and what was the commissioning day like?
Brilliant, yeah, fantastic day, family down, really great occasion. I suppose it's a long time coming, essentially. You know, you're looking forward to it for the best part of 2 years, and when it does finally come, you know, it's a great occasion.
Yeah, and I've been to a few of them down here on the naval base, actually, out on the square and the outdoor element of it. Yeah, but it's a great ceremony.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's a brilliant day, really.
Something that all the cadetships talk about is what a sense of achievement on that day it is. And it's the same with obviously all recruit training and everything. You always get that day when you bring in the family and they get the
yeah, it's great for them to see life in the naval base as well. Your family, you know, they don't really appreciate what you're going through when you're telling them on the phone, so for them to come down and walk around the base and perhaps get a visit to a ship on the day, you know, it's great to see life in the Navy, really
give them an idea of what you've been doing for the last
exactly yeah.
So after commissioning, so you're now commissioned as, typically it's an ensign,
yeah, or a sub-lieutenant if you had a degree coming in, essentially. So I would have been in UL for 4 years before I came in. So I was commissioned as a sub-lieutenant.
Okay, right. So you're commissioned and you have your rank, and then you become an officer under training.
Correct, yes. So you still have a number of years to complete your naval watchkeeping training. So I was training up until 2015. So I got my naval watchkeeping in 2015. And then since then, I've had a number of different roles on ships and in the base then.
Okay, but as regards the kind of officer under training perspective of it, so you do your second year of your nautical science degree, which is, again, building upon what you've done before, the same sort of topics we were talking about earlier.
Yes.
And there's an element of it where you go to sea as well.
Yeah, so in the third year, it's all spent at sea. So you're on either a naval vessel, or else you have to do a period of 3 months on board a merchant vessel. So I was on board an Italian oil tanker.
Yeah.
So we were operating between Australia and Singapore for 3 months.
Wow.
So it was brilliant experience. Yeah, really, really enjoyed it. It's life away from the military, you know, so it's a big change from how we operate on naval service ships. Get to see how the merchant navy work.
And you get to kind of, I suppose, that international qualification as well. And I mean, it must have been an amazing experience as well to see all of these different ports and things.
Oh, brilliant, yeah. We got quite a lot of time in Australia and a bit of time in Singapore as well, and you get to interact with, you know, officers from all over the world, you know, a lot of Indian officers and Russians, Italian officers, and, you know, it was a brilliant experience for the 3 months.
It sounds fantastic. It sounds like something kind of really unique kind of aspect.
Yeah,
of it.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So, and that leads you to be certified as a merchant officer, or a merchant officer of the watch.
Correct, yeah. So once you have your degree finished, you have your sea time done, you can complete a number of exams, and if you get through them, then you'll be given a merchant officer to watch ticket.
Okay. And like, at what point do you kind of get your naval service? Is that a distinct one, the naval service watchkeeping certificate, or are they kind of...
Yeah, the training is ongoing kind of side by side, but the naval watchkeeping kind of happens once you've completed your level 7 degree.
So you get a level 7 at the end of it, but you do have the option to kind of continue further.
Correct, yeah. So you can continue on and get your level 8 once you complete your dissertation, and that's kind of side by side with the naval watchkeeping qualification.
So you're talking about, for the level 7, it's kind of 3 years in the National Maritime College of Ireland, but then it's an extra year for the dissertation side of it?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, that's it.
So at that point then, you're a qualified operations branch officer, and what happens then?
Then you're posted out to the fleet, essentially. So my first posting was navigation and communications officer on the Roisin. So I was out there 2015 for my first, I suppose, real experience as a fully qualified officer.
So the kind of... The learning doesn't stop there, though, obviously.
No, the first 6 months are mayhem, really. Like, you're learning how to run a division, how to manage people. I suppose people are obviously the most valuable resource, but also, you know, obviously it's difficult to manage different personnel and their lives and their backgrounds and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, so of course. Yeah.
You're learning on the job, essentially, for the first 6 or 12 months.
And you're kind of viewing the side of where you're as well as kind of an operations, say, operator on board a ship. You're also a people manager.
Yeah, you're running divisions. Yes.
So like you're out of training. You're on board Éilí Roisin, or even as now you're on board Éilí Kyr. Like, what? Give us an idea of what kind of a typical day would be for, say, a navigations officer on board a ship.
So I suppose when a ship's at sea, it's working on watch systems. So the navigation officer, typically from 8 in the morning till 12 midday, you're on watch. So you're keeping the ship safe, essentially, on the bridge. So you're in charge of the ship for the captain, essentially. So that'd be 8 to 12. After 12, then you're off watch. You might be dealing with divisional issues. So you might have someone who's applying for a course.
And
or wants
when we
to
say division as well, but we're talking about like the different denominations on board the ship. Like
exactly,
like your engineering
yeah.
division, your
communications division, yeah. So you may be dealing with a member of the crew who's trying to apply for a course or trying to upskill. So it's up to you then to further that application through the chain of command. So that'd be maybe after lunch. Then you might go boarding. Fisheries boardings are part and parcel of our operations at sea. So we conduct the boarding on a Spanish or French vessel. Come back from that. Perhaps then in the evening, you know, the captain might decide to go to anchor. So as a navigation officer, that's your bread and butter, essentially. So you're planning the anchorage. You're executing the anchorage. And then in the evening, you know, might go for a run or something, boats ashore, go for a run and come back and relax in for the evening. Perhaps it would be kind of a general day-to-day activity.
I imagine you get seen an awful lot of around Ireland as you're kind of going around on the fishing patrols.
Yeah, that's one of the best parts, really. You get to, I suppose, go to anchor or get to experience parts of the coastline that you'd never see normally in a car or by the land, essentially.
Yeah, it's just something that people mightn't even think about when they think about going out on a naval ship, but that kind of sort of way out there in a kind of very wild kind of place, like as in which
exactly,
the sea is.
Yeah. Off the west coast, essentially, you know, you've the Skelligs, you've the Blaskets, all these great places that you wouldn't normally get to see, but it's part and parcel of life in the Navy, really.
That's your office.
That's it, essentially. Yeah, that's it, exactly.
So, like, as regards sort of applying for a naval service cadet, if people have been listening in and they've been thinking this could be something that they have an interest in applying for, we're going to go through just the process for it. But before we do, just to underline to any listeners at home that obviously we're recording during the COVID-19 pandemic, and that's still very much high on the kind of agenda for the country. So what we describe here is the ideal scenario for recruitment. It's the ideal scenario for the conduct of the Naval Service Cadetship training. This is obviously subject to change with COVID-19, but this is kind of the ideal situation. So first of all, the cadetship, as it's open at the moment until the 31st of May, you apply online.
Yeah, so you submit your application online, yes.
So you apply online and then the window closes. The next phase that you go into then will be the psychometric testing.
Psychometric testing, yeah. So you complete that online. You'll get a link into your email. You go online, complete it, and then the results are kind of formulated and you'll get further instructions then. So then the next stage, moving on from that, you're looking at your different phases. So you've got your likes of your group assessment, you've got a fitness assessment, medical assessment, and an interview as well, just to I suppose that's the pinnacle of the whole recruitment
process. Yeah. And like the other services we've talked about in the previous podcast we've done on the cadetships, the interviews are competency-based interviews, and they follow various competencies such as leadership and supervising, such as planning and organising. And for any of the specifics with regard to that, or indeed specifics with regard to educational requirements you might need, they're available in the terms and conditions, which are on the Defence Forces website, military.ie. So you complete your review, and then you're placed on a panel, and you are not offered a cadetship as the, you know, depending on how you've done in the competition.
Exactly, yeah.
And what we've said in a lot of the previous episodes, and what I stress, because I didn't get it on the first occasion, but if you have a real interest in actually joining and you don't get it the first time, it's important to, you know, not be too downhearted, to go back at it again.
Yeah, it's very common for people not to get it on the first go and come back 2-3 years after and get it eventually, yeah. It's very common, really.
So the podcast has been mainly focused on the operations aspect of the cadetship, or the operations cadetship, to become a Naval Service Operations Officer. But Paul, there's other types of cadetships available in the Naval Service as well.
Yeah, so at the moment we've three of them that are open at present. So we have the Marine Engineering Officer. So he's the MEO, we call him, on board. So he's in charge of all the equipment, the engines, the aircon, the thrusters, all the nuts and bolts of the ship, essentially. So very important role. And then we also have electrical engineering cadetships. So electrical engineers are also very important. A lot of our ships have largely electrical equipment is becoming more and more prominent lately, yeah, as the ships get more modern. So it's a very important role also. So those two cadetships are also open.
And obviously, for the educational requirements for engineering or electrical engineering or mechanical engineering cadetships in the Naval Service, those education requirements are available on the terms and conditions on military.ie. Just a point to note as well, with regard to the engineering, the two engineering streams that you can go into with the cadetship, you don't need to have those degrees before you come in. The Naval Service will train you.
Yeah, the Navy will train you up. They'll put you through college. So it's important that anyone out there who's an interest, whether they're serving personnel or completely novices to the military, that the Navy would put you through college essentially and get you these qualifications. That it's not something you need to have before you apply.
Okay, great. Well, listen, thanks very much for joining us on the show, Paul. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Ian. Good to be here. Enjoyed it.
I think there's like an awful lot of really useful stuff for anybody that's looking to begin a career in the Naval Service, or indeed just for people outside who have an interest in it. So, yeah, again, really appreciate it. As always, for our listeners out there, please keep an eye on Defence Forces social media platforms and military.ie for further updates on the Irish Defence Forces. And serving members are encouraged to check out the members area of military.ie. As previously mentioned, the Defence Forces cadetship competition for all three services, the Army, the Air Corps and the Naval Service, is currently open until the 31st of May 2020. And for information on all these cadetships, please visit the current competitions page on military.ie. Today's episode was produced by Corporal Keith Harrison and Corporal Lee Coyle. The Irish Defence Forces podcast will be back soon with another episode. For everybody out there, stay safe.